We're going to start now with the integumentary system, which is covered in Chapter 5 in your textbook. And the integumentary system is going to include the skin and the hair and fingernails and exocrine glands and so on. If we were deer, it would include our antlers. If we were cows, it would include our horns. So any of the structures that are involved with the skin. And what I want to mention about the integumentary system is that it is one of the things that gives us our individual physical identity or makes us recognizable to all of the other humans around us. The color of our skin, the color of our hair, the length of our hair, these kinds of characteristics, along with bone structure and, of course, other things, are going to be what give us our individual appearance. So the integument's important in that it gives us individual appearance. And in humans especially, that's very important because we're social creatures. We communicate, and we need to be able to recognize one individual from another. So I want to talk about the functions of the integumentary system besides the one that I just mentioned in terms of giving us our physical individual identity. Some of the functions include protection, which is probably one of the first functions people think of. The cutaneous membrane of the skin and other parts of the integumentary system protect underlying tissues and organs from abrasion and infection, and also from other threats that might exist from the outside world. So provides a layer of protection that protects our internal organs and other tissues from abrasion and also from infection. Another important function of the integumentary system is excretion. We do excrete some things through our skin, including certain salts, water, and organic wastes. And so when you think about sweat, for example, some of the things that are leaving your body through sweat, obviously water is one of the things, but also some salts, some electrolytes, and some wastes will also leave the body. Other species excrete more things through their skin, but we... those are some of the things that we would excrete. Another important characteristic or function of the integumentary system is maintenance of normal body temperature. So the skin is, the skeletal muscles actually generate heat, but the skin and some of the layers below it are important for insulating and keeping that heat in our body so that we can maintain a relatively stable temperature of 98.6. degrees Fahrenheit. Another important function is synthesis. Whenever you see the word synthesis, it means to manufacture or to create or put together something to make something bigger. What the skin can do is it's important in synthesizing vitamin D3. And so exposure of the skin to sunlight causes the production of a vitamin by the skin, and this vitamin is important both in our calcium balance, so it has an influence on the skeletal system, and it's important for immune function as well. Another function of the skin is storage, and this is going to be in the form often of fat, and but it's not just fat that's being stored, it's also nutrients that are going to be stored in the fat, and so on. So storage is important. And then finally, detection. And what's meant by detection is that there are nerve endings in the skin which give us a sense of touch. They allow us to discern pressure, pain, temperature, etc. So very important connection point for between the integument and the nervous system, which allows us to monitor what's going on in the outside world around us. Now, when we think about the skin, first of all, I think I mentioned before that it's a cutaneous membrane, and it's made up of two layers. And so the two layers are the epidermis and also the dermis. So I think in your notes, you probably will see epidermis right away under layers of the skin. But if you go about a page down or so from there, you'll see letter B, the dermis. So the epidermis is going to be the outer layer, and it's made primarily of stratified squamous epithelial cells. Now, why is it made of stratified squamous epithelial cells? Whenever you see that something is made of stratified squamous epithelial cells, think about abrasion. What stratified squamous epithelial cells do is they constantly regenerate themselves. So it's going to be many, many, many layers of skin cells, and the top layers or the outer layers are constantly being abraded or brushed off, and they're constantly being replaced by brand new cells from underneath. And so any part of the body, including the outside surface of the body, that is going to be subject to abrasion is going to have stratified squamous epithelial cells, which allow it to handle basically this abrasion without being damaged. The prevalent type of cells, so again, are stratified squamous epithelial cells, but another answer to that question would be keratinocytes, which are basically what we think of as skin cells. They are stratified squamous epithelial cells that have been embedded with a protein called keratin. And this protein allows them to become much harder in texture than most cells of the body. Most cells of the body are actually, what's the word for them? You could squish them pretty easily, or you could squash them, or you could break them apart. But keratinocytes, are much tougher, and so they form the outer surface of our skin, and they can deal with the abrasions that we subject ourselves to. Okay, so when we're talking about the epidermis, it's going to be the outer layer of the skin. It's made up of stratified squamous epithelial cells, and these cells are called keratinocytes. There are two kinds of skin found in the body. There's what's called thick skin and thin skin. And they are distinct or different from each other in a couple of ways, although their general structure in terms of the layers that they contain are fairly similar. Excuse me. I think what I'll do is I'll talk about the layers first, and then we'll come back to thick versus thin skin, because it'll make more sense if you know what the layers are like. So I want to go on to the next little section that says the epidermis is divided into 4 to 5 layers depending on the skin type. The bottom layer, or the innermost layer, is going to be the stratum germinativum, which is sometimes also called the stratum basale, or basal. And this is going to be, again, this is the innermost layer, the bottom layer, the layer that you won't be able to see it as you look at the surface of your skin, because it's underneath all the other layers. And this layer contains active cell, what's going on in this layer is active cell division. And when you look at a microscope slide that shows a cross-section of the epidermis, the stratum germinativum often appears dark purple, almost blackish. And the reason that it appears this dark purple is because the chromosomes in the cells tend to stain dark purple with the stains and the dyes that are used when making cross-section slides of the skin. So the reason that the chromosomes are going to be so visible in this particular layer is because the cells are undergoing cell division pretty much around the clock. If we go upward, or kind of towards the surface of the skin, the next layer up from the stratum germinativum is going to be the stratum spinosum. And spinosum means spiny. So this is the spiny layer. And I personally have never been able to distinguish that the cells look spiny, but I kind of take it for granted, or take it on faith, that that's true. This layer is going to be about 8 to 10 layers thick. And, in this layer, the cells are still dividing, but they're not dividing as actively as they were in the stratum germinativum. And what is happening in this layer is that the cells are beginning to attach to one another. So these little skin cells that started out as individual cells are starting to kind of bond together to make the nice tough outer surface cells that we have on the surface of our skin. The next layer up is called the stratum granulosum. And granulosum refers to the grainy texture of this layer. It's usually between 3 and 5 layers thick, and it's at this layer that the protein keratin begins to accumulate in the cytoplasm of the cells. So the cells begin to manufacture massive amounts of keratin, protein keratin, which makes the cells themselves tough. But what it also does is, as it accumulates in the cells, it actually begins to choke out or kill the cell. It chokes out all of the other functioning organelles, and so on. And so, as in the stratum granulosum, the cells begin to die as they accumulate more and more keratin. The stratum lucidum is going to be the next layer up, and this layer is only found in thick skin, so you're not going to find it in thin skin. It's a waterproof layer, and it usually appears kind of a bright, glassy white as you look at it in a cross-section of the epidermis. And it's what happens in this layer is that the skin cells bind very, very, very tightly together to make a waterproof layer. And this is important because the stratum lucidum is found in thick skin, and thick skin is going to be found in places like the soles of our feet and the palms of our hands. And what it does is it allows us to walk around in wet grass without absorbing a whole bunch of water, or to have our hands in water and not be absorbing lots and lots of water. Finally, we get to the outermost layer, which is the stratum corneum. And this is the exposed surface of the skin. And by this time, by the time the cells arrive at this exposed surface, they are completely keratinized or filled with keratin protein. They are dead. They are dead cells at this point. However, they are bonded together, so they form kind of little thin layers or sheets. And if you've ever had a bad sunburn and you've started to peel, you have seen these sheets of dead skin. They're dead cells, but they are attached to one another, so they actually form these little sheets. All right. So process of keratinization again is the cells begin to manufacture more and more of this keratin protein, which does make them tough, but it also kills off the cell. So the outer cell layers are going to be made up of dead cells. And I hate to gross you out, but if you've ever been dusting the house and you're wondering what dust is, a large part of what dust is these little tiny keratin, these little tiny dead skin cells that flake off of our bodies basically 24/7, and they end up accumulating on surfaces in our houses. Okay, so skin color. What in the world causes different skin to have different colors? And there's a variety of things that contribute to the color of the skin. And most of the skin color is determined in the epidermis, and it depends on the concentration of several pigments. However, there are some temporary changes to skin color which have to do with things like blushing, and so on, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But some of the pigments that are involved in skin color, the two most prevalent ones are going to be carotene, which has an orangish or yellow color. Obviously, we don't usually appear real orange, but some people have a yellowish cast to their skin, and everybody has some keratin that's contributing to their skin color. And carotene is going to be found in the stratum corneum and in the dermis. It can be turned into vitamin D3, so it's an important pigment that to be present. So carotene is going to contribute somewhat to the color of the skin. Another pigment that contributes to the color of the skin is melanin. And melanin, there are actually many, many forms of melanin, and they range in color from brownish to black. This is a pigment that's found in the stratum germinativum. And everybody has melanin. People with darker skin have more melanin, but even people, except for, I believe, albinos may not have any at all. But most people, generally everybody besides albinos have some melanin. And, the important function of melanin is that it helps to absorb and divert damaging ultraviolet rays that could damage tissues, underlying tissues below the skin. So UV rays or ultraviolet rays can cause mutations, and the purpose of melanin is to prevent the UV rays from getting below the skin surface to the organs and the tissues below and causing mutations, or even to be causing mutations in the skin itself, which can lead to skin cancer and so on. If you have fair skin, your skin will develop more melanin when you're exposed to a lot of sun, and that's what we call a suntan, or in some cases a sunburn. Your body has the ability to generate more melanin depending on circumstances, although different people have genetically different levels of melanin that is normally expressed from day to day. And I just want to point out that there are about 13 different genes that contribute to skin color. And so it's not a simple matter of there being a gene for melanin or not a gene for melanin. There are many combinations of different genes for different types of melanin and different concentrations of melanin, which leads to an enormous array of skin tones in human beings. I want to also point out that circulation of blood in the dermis can affect skin color. And this is, again, when we're talking about blushing. Or the opposite of blushing, if you've ever seen someone who has actually become pale due to fright, if there is blood circulating in the dermis, in other words, the blood is close to the surface of the body, the person will blush, they'll appear reddish, flushed is another word for that. And if the blood is diverted deeper into the body and away from the dermis and the skin, the person will appear more pale. Sometimes a person can actually appear bluish, their skin can appear bluish, and this is usually because of lack of oxygen. So that's another color that can be seen in the skin. Another important contributor to color that can appear is when a person becomes jaundiced. And jaundice is going to lead to a yellow color in the skin, not caused by keratin, but caused by the buildup of bilirubin, which is a product that's usually recycled when old blood cells are broken down and recycled. But if the liver is having some trouble and not functioning properly, it cannot always recycle or get rid of the bilirubin as quickly as it needs to, and it starts to build up in the skin, and the person will start to appear kind of yellowish, and their eyes will appear kind of yellowish, and this can also be accompanied by some itching as well. Okay, the last thing about the epidermis that I want to talk about is the fact that the skin and the skin cells are producing vitamin D3. And I've already mentioned this a little bit, but I do want to talk about it a little bit more because it's very important. The cells in the stratum spinosum and the stratum germinativum use sunlight to convert cholesterol into vitamin D3. And vitamin D3 is going to be it's an important vitamin for calcium balance and for the immune system. So right here, we're looking at a way in which the skin or the integumentary system is interacting with the immune system. And if you think about calcium balance, what system depends strongly on calcium? Hopefully the skeletal system comes to mind for you. So here we have the integumentary system interacting with the immune system, also interacting with the skeletal system. And I just want to point out, you may not know this yet, but the muscular system depends on calcium as well. So we've got a lot of interactions going on here. On the next segment, we'll talk about the dermis, which is the layer that's going to be right underneath the epidermis.